This is the Fuel Sports Network.
Every goal.
Every match.
Ron Nuttall. Chris Hambleton. They've got you covered. At the Park. An STL City SC podcast.
That story, even locally, is you hear it all over the place. Like, St. Louis was a hotbed just waiting to explode with the season ticket deposits that topped like 100,000 or something. I mean, it just got incredibly hyped up really fast for a lot of people. And if you weren't paying attention, which a lot of people weren't, you didn't realize just how much it was bubbling up under the surface, just waiting to explode.
Yeah, like it seemed like the MLS was dead set on giving it to San Diego or Sacramento. And then it got to the point where it was like, oh shit, St. Louis, like that's so big, we can't overlook it this year. And I think having the Taylor Twelmans of the world and like that clout behind it kind of brought it to the forefront. But St. Louis definitely hopped the queue in terms of teams and probably saved the ownership group a couple hundred million in terms of the expansion fees.
Man, that journey was crazy. Like, I don't know how close you guys are following the past. I mean, from, I want to say 20 St. Louis FC. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them from the USL, played in Fenton. But from like 2016 to whenever we got a team announced in 2019, I think it was, or 2018 when they started it, that whole time period was just this concentrated push behind the scenes to get MLS. And there were two initiatives that happened, and myself, like, I followed it so close that I was worried I'd get burned out on the entire thing before they even kicked a ball if they eventually got a team. And it was just so crazy following it because it really was all about the money to an extent, but MLS was pretty dead set on getting a team in St. Louis if they could just find somebody to pony up to pay for that expansion fee to get a stadium. Cause at that time it was like, if you wanted to be in the league, you had to have a plan for a stadium. They had just gone through that NYCFC fiasco where even now they're playing in two, three different stadiums, depending. And they weren't going to do that. So like they had requirements they had set that were pretty new for when St. Louis was trying to get a team. And it all started with Jim Cavanaugh and that group with Scott Gallagher. Like you were mentioning, Chris, like Scott Gallagher tried to raise up from the youth to the USL and then to MLS. And they were close. The MLS to STL thing that almost happened, but they needed a public vote to get that across the line with that extra little bit of funding. Cause they're, you know, nonprofit youth organization, whole different mechanism thing didn't work. And eventually the Taylors stepped in after that whole Sacramento thing was going on, because you're at that point where it's like MLS is saying we're cutting off expansion teams, you know, we're going to take a break after this one. And so they're creating this scarcity thing. And we were worried in St. Louis that when this vote failed, it was just dead. And COVID was hitting around that time, right after we got a team. And so the old St. Louis FC kind of died off as a result from that. And thank God the Taylors stepped in, because it was not just serendipitous. I mean, it was the perfect storm of not just what we wanted in a team, but what we needed from a local ownership group. It's you'd be hard pressed to find any other ownership group that really matches the level of local that St. Louis brought. And the timing right before COVID, getting that in, being able to fund a lot of the stuff right before that. It really was serendipitous in the timing and just the people involved. It was crazy to follow. You know,
if they couldn't find the money, they could have just sued Stan Kroenke a couple of years earlier and settled, and they would have paid for two MLS teams. You could have had one on each side of the river, I guess. But
wait out that money, which just got allocated.
I know. I was reading about that just before we went on tonight. It's like, is there anything more surprising?
Right.
But anyway. So thanks for joining us tonight, Matt. And by the way, welcome to At the Park STL, everyone, right here on Fuel Sports Network. You can check us out on X at the Park STL, and you can check out Fuel at Fuel Sports Network. I would love to give you a list of Fuel Sports shows, but they just won't give me one. So I'm only going to mention my favorite from Fuel Sports Network besides this one would be Team Arrivals podcast, and that is a baseball related theme. Surprise, surprise. I'm on that one, but I'm not going to mention the other shows. Unless you remember them.
No.
Okay, I'm not going to do it either. I'm putting a little pressure on them there, Matt, to give me a list of all the shows that I'm supposed to be talking about, but I'm not going to do
rundown.
That
time.
I would love a rundown. I'm not going to do it myself, though. I'm holding out. Matt Baker from Flyover Footy. Besides Christian here, I'm giving you a little bit of my backstory that you didn't ask for, but I gave it to you anyway. I've had most of my education, not just from watching two seasons now of MLS, playing a little FC25 too on the side. Somebody who coded that game as a Galaxy fan, I swear. Because they're hard to beat. Besides Christian correcting me and educating me along the way, Matt, you on Flyover Footy have probably been as big as any source of kind of teaching me what things like GAM mean that I had no clue, and the transfer windows. So I have actually learned a ton listening to you guys over there. So thank you for that education. Now yeah, you speak fast though, so I've at times had to put you on half speed.
Oh, that's good to know. You know, I have listened to I have this thing where I hate to listen to myself back. So I'll do it just a little bit to, you know, make sure it all sounds good. Cause you guys record, you know what it's like, but I do not like the sound of my own voice. I have not gotten there yet. And I've been told, and even by the guys on my pod, Phil, Stu, and Santi, that I talk fast. And sometimes it's good if I need to get a lot of stuff in and I am dialed in, but sometimes it just overwhelms everybody. So I hear you on the
when you were solving the whole thing around I think it was GAM and how much teams had. I had to go back and rewind that a couple of times. I'm like, this is really good. It's the stuff I need to know here. I'm gonna have to rewind.
I think even the owners have to rewind for GAM because no one knows what GAM is.
And everybody forgets. That's the thing is once you learn it, you know, the concept you get, okay, it's fake MLS money. It was a way to get around the salary cap. It's money that only exists in MLS. Like you want to pay a transfer fee. Oh no, you're paying that in GAM, something that you build up over time that only works in MLS. Even if you learn that concept a couple of years later, something happens in the league where it's like you get a trade that occurs for GAM or there's an announcement about GAM being awarded to a team because they missed the playoffs or they made Champions Cup. And you're just reminded, wait, they're just handing it out for all these random reasons. And you can, it's tough to get a crack on the full scope of every single thing you can get, be given with GAM. And they're getting better about telling us how much teams have, which they did for the first time, but they're still really bad about the transparency in sometimes you get GAM, sometimes you don't. And how much do you get under what circumstance? So you have these now kind of checkpoints where MLS had said in December, this is how much all the teams have. And now that's kind of everyone who is as nerdy as I am takes that amount. And now you have a new starting point to go forward and try to guess, all right, how much flexibility do you really have? And you can actually play Monday morning quarterback. You can play armchair GM to an extent, which MLS needs. They're lagging in that way. And I think it's an opportunity in the football manager type world to get people more involved and more hyped, because the whole idea of Flyover Footy is to get people excited because of what you know. The more you know about the sport, the more on the field and off the field surrounding the league, because St. Louis is soccer crazy, but they're not MLS crazy like they are soccer crazy. So you get knowledgeable about MLS, about what St. Louis City is stepping into, and you create better fans. That's my approach anyway.
Yeah. And I think that's like perfect for what fans of the international club scene just went through with the transfer window, where if you're a fan of Chelsea or Man U, or you hate them and you hate Barca, like I'm a huge Man United fan. We suck. This window was just kind of weird. I hate Barca because Barca is like the Inter Miami, where their financials don't make sense. Like, you know that there's rules. The league has come in and they've stepped in and said, you can't buy players, you can't afford these players. And then they've taken them to like their federal Supreme, like the equivalent of the US Supreme Court. And you're like, whoa, dude, like that's really serious. Like that's really serious. So knowing what teams have and what teams have to be sellers and what teams should be buyers makes the season, it makes the windows exciting. I think that's what MLS needs to get more of. Like, okay, you're having a bad year as a team, but can you be a seller? Like, can you develop guys? Can you sell guys? And you keep fans enticed that way. So I think that transparency is going to be a big step.
Well, and I think even to, you know, newer fans coming from the outside of this, like, avid baseball fan, I understand the trade deadline and the offseason and the winter meetings and how all that stuff works. So I can follow it pretty easy. And it is more complex with soccer, especially if you're new to it. It's really hard to figure out. That first transfer window was confusing as hell to me. I didn't know what I was watching or what I was reading about. Second year, exciting because St. Louis did a heck of a turnover, which I want to ask you about something about that, Matt, in a second. But yeah, it is complicated. And I know I've been whining a lot about where's all the MLS news, right? Because baseball news, I don't even have to look for it. Just hits you in the face. No matter who I mute, I still get baseball news. Doesn't matter. But soccer, I have to go hunting for a lot of that a little bit more. So you have to open up your book to me, Matt. Tell me where you get all this stuff.
You know, the crazy thing with MLS is you could probably follow. I mean, you have your team specific guys. Like I pride myself at being one of the two or three that am able to at one point or another break city news, whether people mm-hmm. like it or not. But you have these MLS guys, you have your Tom Bogerts of the world, and you have your Fabrizio Romanos who are able to break news of guys coming into MLS. But if you follow, the weird thing is it's not like necessarily baseball where you could follow ESPN, Sports Illustrated, all these other outlets that everybody has their various sources.
Right.
Just a few guys are really plugged in. And I think that speaks to the centralized nature of MLS. Like there is a league front office where all the contracts reside. It's a single entity league. So when you play for MLS as a player, your contract is with the league. And I have no doubt that some of these sources are just straight up at the league office. And so you have your few guys who mm-hmm. are tapped into that. And that's why they're able to break so much news themselves. And that's why you don't see this massive amount of people really bothering to do that, because there's not a ton of sources outside of the league office in a lot of ways. Yeah, you could get agents all over the place. You could get teams that leak here and there, but by and large, it from my experience, the league office is the source of a lot of this stuff, and that's unique in the sports world in America.
So I want to switch gears a little bit here, and I don't know how much you follow other St. Louis sports, but it just feels like such an odd time in St. Louis right now. You know, really for me, and maybe it's my own little bubble I've been living in lately, but City had been the only real, I think, exciting news, at least to me, over the last month because, training camp started and all that. But I guess Jim Edmonds thought he was going to change that a little bit and bring the Cardinals to the top of the news cycle in St. Louis. And Matt, I got to ask you real quick. I don't remember. I mean, baseball in St. Louis is gonna reign king still for a while. Something drastic would have to happen. Don't know if you wouldn't remember this, but the early to mid 90s was a pretty dark time in baseball in St. Louis. And I think it's not saying it's arrived there yet, but it's the closest it's ever been.
Yeah, I make no bones about how old I am. I'm like 38 years old, so I grew up.
Yeah.
That was the prime of my childhood, watching Greg Jeffries, Mark Whitten, and those guys. You know, I know those names because they were who I grew up with. And mm-hmm. the record, I don't care about at this point because we eventually got better. But, you know, those are my guys. Ozzie Smith and the twilight of his career. And it kind of feels like that, but I have a tough time, I guess, waxing poetic because I'm an adult now and I don't have the thing to grasp onto where it's like, they're your players, good or bad. Yeah. To me, it's like, I've got plenty of other things in my life.
Yeah. These I was
interest me
a little older than you. So I grew up with a little bit of those 80s Cardinals too. So I saw it at its peak and then it dropped and then
Whitey ball.
Yeah. I caught it, I think the back half of the 80s when I started to wake up and really pay attention to baseball. It was in 85. I know it sounds very convenient, but it wasn't 85 when I started paying attention. But I kind of saw the peak and then it hit the valley. And I feel like, you know, gosh, it feels like it's there again. But, you know, you mentioned it. They got better in the mid-90s, but they got better when the DeWitts bought the team, mm-hmm. brought in Tony La Russa and a slew of other. And they transformed that team in one off season.
That's it.
And I haven't seen quite a transformation like that in St. Louis since. I mean, there's been Mark McGwire deals and Will Clark and Larry Walker and stuff brought in. And certainly there was a Wayne Gretzky deal for the Blues that was exciting. Didn't last very long. But I hadn't seen anything really transform a team since that. But that's why I want to go back to last year, because we don't see this in St. Louis very often, a huge changes that City made last year. And I know you talked about it a lot last year, but what do you take from all of that? I mean, that's a pretty significant transformation middle of the year.
And it happened quickly. And I think MLS, that's one thing you're going to have to get used to, is the short-term nature of these contracts. Players don't stick around for very long. And in some ways, you don't want them to stick around for that long because the nature of where MLS is and the global landscape is we're not Major League Baseball. We're the top and we're buying from South Korea as a step up to us. We are a selling league now. When St. Louis City first entered the league, when we first got a team, MLS was just starting to crack that door open to being a selling league. And we're firmly there. And so the pathway is there for all these players to come in at a young age, to make their mark for a year or two, and then to be sold on, because as an MLS team, you want to be able to make those high dollar moves out. You have to fund yourself. You want to be self-sufficient, self-sustaining. You want to be able to buy those designated players based on people you sell. And that's kind of the nature of the beast right now. And it's going to lead to what we saw last year, especially if you're underperforming. San Jose in this offseason went under a similar transformation where they started bringing on a whole slew of new players along with a new coach in Bruce Arena. And we did it last year. We pulled the trigger really fast on Bradley Carnell and moved on from some players so we could get value, like Tim Parker and Sam Adeniran and Aziel Jackson. We didn't let these guys sit and stew and create even more locker room consternation just themselves. We saw that we could get value. It wasn't working out, and Lutz was quick to pull the trigger. I, looking back on it, am pretty respectful of that move. I think that his goals as the season was progressing were always to make the playoffs. That goal didn't go away until we were mathematically eliminated late in the season. Mm-hmm. And even when John Hackworth took over, it was still go as hard as you can, hold out until you get those new guys in the transfer window, which you mentioned earlier, Ron. It was the transfer window is a difficult thing for MLS to manage, especially if you're having the summer be your window to make your moves. And it was too little too late, but that was the theme of the middle of the season last year, is you ride out these injuries, you roll with guys like Mekhi Joyner, Johnny Klein, and you see what you can get out of all these loans from City 2 just to hold on until Cedric Teuchert and Marcel Hartl arrive. And that excitement and what they ended up doing at the back half of last year is why we're so excited about 2025. And so I see last year as just this very turbulent year, but it gives insight into just how quick Lutz is willing to pull the trigger on certain things, which kind of goes into the antithesis of what we're talking about with the Cardinals, mm-hmm. where they're not willing to pull triggers if they see gaps. They're not even willing to see gaps in a lot of ways, to the Jim Edmonds quotes, to just a lot of the stories from Jack Flaherty and others. This is a wholly different beast where it's win now, and it feels like Lutz knows that he has his contract. He knows that he's going to be with City for a fairly finite amount of time. And it's already longer than he's stayed with most of his clubs, but he wants to cement a legacy of sorts. He wants to leave St. Louis, not having just built something that can sustain itself, but he wants to have some measure of success with that. And I think that's why you see this sense of urgency that ended up being the story of 2024. And it ended at a point where it was a good place to launch 2025, filling in a couple holes at the end of the season. But it was definitely, it was what nobody expected as a whole, from the expectations we had going into the season. I think Bradley Carnell, it's debatable on his overall success as a head coach in that year and a half, even looking at 2023. But I think St. Louis ended up in a better place, having gone through all of that. Lutz likes to say they went through it in kind of a reverse order, where he would have liked to start off really low, built the team up, and had this more upward trajectory through years 1, 2, and 3. But I think, yes, last year was a necessary recalibration so that the fans have proper expectations, but also we can bring in players as opposed to just getting lucky in certain regards, overproducing our expected goals and setting ourselves up for better success for the next few years, where we have longer contracts now with those top guys like Hartl and Teuchert.
So you mentioned about bringing in guys and the trend seems to be in the MLS to go after the young South American talent, but St. Louis City has kind of, I don't know if it's because of the fan base and the city, like the culture that St. Louis has is mm-hmm. not the South American fan base. It's the German, European player, that style. And they've seemed to identify guys from either Germany directly, or you have like a Berkey who is Swiss, but played it for Borussia Dortmund and, you know, Leuven and stuff like that. Klaus, who hand up, I thought he was German for like the first five games. And then finally, Ron was like, you realize he's Brazilian, right? I'm like, oh, he's one of those Germans. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Okay. But yeah, like City's kind of done it in the unorthodox style with that. And what makes that even more impressive is the players that they've been able to develop and sell off are not guys that were developed in Brazil or Paraguay or Argentina. They are like American guys or European young guys that have come here that have gotten developed by City, which is like great. That shows the rest of, you know, Europe and those leagues, especially in like Sweden, Norway, the Scandinavian, where the MLS might be on par or a little bit below, that they can come here and they can get a future out of it. How do you see that? Is that a sustainable model, do you think? Or do you think like City's kind of playing from behind with that?
My first thing was Lutz, is that his familiarity. That's kind
yeah.
of
yeah, yeah.
It all ties back to Lutz for me right now. And
yeah.
He's in charge. It's his scouting network. It's his roster build. He's in charge of identifying talent, and he has the final say in all of these. And it's not just geographically. It has to do with familiarity, being able to talk to the guy. So many times he's talked about developing relationships either from youth or from other, when he was sporting director, when he was a head of scout in Germany, developing relationships with the players, some of the players back then, like Leuven and Nilsson, Berkey even, but also the style of play plays into it.
Yeah.
And there's an argument to be made that the style of play, which is akin to the New York Red Bulls in that energy drink style soccer, that style, you could have a harder time translating from a South American style of play at a young age to that, where they're used to playing a certain way. They're used to maybe being a little more technical on the ball, play in possession, and then having to come into St. Louis. And with that, like the whole concept of bringing in those young players is at least with, I would say 60 or 70% an eye towards developing them quickly and then selling them on. You could sign them as on a U22 deal, meaning you're paying a higher transfer fee or you got a little more hope in them. You're willing to invest more, but the ultimate goal is to develop them for a couple of years and then sell them on. And if you want to maximize the most out of these young players, you can't introduce a brand new system, an entirely different way to play soccer from what they're used to. You're going to waste some of those peak years of creating value in MLS. So that, coupled with the fact that I don't know what his scouting network looks like in South America, but he has signed a couple players. He signed
one relatively recent, right?
To City 2. Yeah. Right. Signed one this year and one last year. Neither of them have yet to make the, you know, the first team roster. So we're just looking at basically like Celio and Klaus as the Brazilians. But a lot of the reason that he's getting these guys from Germany and Scandinavia does have to do with the familiarity, the knowing that they can handle this system and that they can come in and they can hit the ground running. Because you look at a couple guys who that wasn't the case with, Jake Erdwood-Reich from last year. He didn't hit the ground running, came from Australia. So there's the travel issue. You know, he had a myriad of things going on. And then you have Selmer Pedro, who came and I would argue is the biggest bust that St. Louis has signed so far, their first signing, and never really cracked the first team in any meaningful way. So he's trying to avoid those few misses that he's had by, yes, sticking with some familiarity. And it's a huge world that he's pulling from. So I think it's a different build at first. The U22 initiatives are one area that we at Flyover have said consistently, we're not taking good advantage of.
Oh yeah.
We have the ability to sign up to four players if we use that roster construction model. But that's something that you have to be intelligent about who you sign. A lot of the big deals in MLS as far as outgoing transfers are those initial U22 signings where you sign them for a few million and you're selling them for now double digits. And we haven't cracked that yet. And that so far in the, and we've only been a club for 2 years. So far, that's probably one of the only that and just big spend in general on a single player. Those are the biggest things I think we've been missing so far. And we haven't really found sustained success with our current roster build. So that's kind of what I'm looking for 25.
Yeah. And I think that's what, listening to the South American players that have come over, the younger guys, and they've said the biggest adjustment is that they underestimated the speed and the physicality of the MLS, especially from like the Brazilian league, where it's more, you have time on the ball, you can dance, you can play it around. But you look at the expansion teams within the last 5 to 7 years, and the Atlantas, the Inter Miamis, Orlandos have all had immediate success not exploiting, but, you know, utilizing the South American pipeline. So it's just been interesting to see City go a different route. Not to say that it's the wrong route. It's just been juxtaposed seeing that and seeing what the trend has been. And now that Carnell is no longer the coach, whether that Red Bull, the high press, long ball style of play is going to be what this team utilizes. Because I don't think that the new coach wants to necessarily do that. From your interviews and what you, I mean, your interviews, Ron and I were talking about it. Your interviews with the Flyover podcast that you had shed a lot of insight into how the players were thinking about the camp and the buildup and the formation as much as they could say. You got the inclination that it's going to be an adjustment, but they're looking forward to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they're excited for sure. And I definitely share that takeaway. We're going to see different formations. We're going to see different tactics on and off the ball. The directness, I don't think they're really going to try to get away from. So like the advanced numbers we like to talk about, the PPDA, where they're not letting the other team do as much with the ball. I think you're still going to see that. But I do think you're going to see more technical abilities on the ball and just more willingness to possess if you need to, especially because the team tried to do that under John Hackworth, but you could tell he didn't have enough time to really instill those kinds of instructions into the team. And so going into with a fresh camp with what Melberg's trying to do, whether you have your formation look, a four in the back or a three center back look, I think it's the principles of his nonstop players, both physically and mentally. If you're turned on when the other team has a dead ball opportunity and they're setting up and you're constantly frustrating, making the other team uncomfortable, if you can sustain that for 90, you're not going to be caught off guard. And so many times, the big deficiency St. Louis had in 2024 is they were beaten on their back line in transition. They were, call it caught sleeping, call it what you want, numbers game. That was a huge weak point for this club. And moving to a three center back look doesn't inherently fix that just by throwing an extra body back there, because three center backs can be beaten transition just as easily as two. I think we all know that. It's the concept of, you have to have the mental acuity turned on a little bit, and that's what he's trying to build. And I think the players are having to adjust to what that really means, as opposed to just, you have the ball, you try to get to the goal as quick as possible, or you lose the ball, you try to move on the ball and create a turnover, because it's the teams that are better on the ball that are able to maneuver around you quickly that beat us so many times. And so it's trying to find solutions to what they experienced last year that I think Melberg is starting to instill, and we're just getting to kind of crack the surface of that. So to me, looking at the players, it kind of seemed like their minds were just a little overwhelmed a little bit, or blown in a sense, where there's so much I'm sure Olaf is trying to instill in them that is different for Klaus. He's been with St. Louis past 2 years. So much is different for him than what a Bradley Carnell or even a John Hackworth was trying to do last year. And it's adjusting, it's adapting, and trying to tailor your style of play to what that new coach wants. And I'm sure there's going to be growing pains, but I'm pretty excited to see what this new City 2.0, as they called it, looks like compared to what Bradley Carnell is having to run out, almost to a detriment, running them out. And they were just beaten over and over.
The new coach, he looks pretty like a pretty intense guy. And I was telling Christian about this. I'm like, I'm not sure if I was trick or treating in the neighborhood, and if I saw him standing at the front door, I'd want to let my kid go up there. Compared to like Bradley Carnell, very friendly face. And you got Olaf, and even in his first presser, before he was speaking, this guy looks like he's pretty intense guy. But is that Is that just the appearance, or is that
imposing? Yeah, he's pretty imposing. He's built pretty big. Like, I'm not a big guy by any stretch of the imagination, but he was imposing, much more than Carnell physically. But he just had this little more gravitas to him. There was a more assurance, more just he's sure of himself a little bit more in his responses, a little bit more intentional with what he's saying, less off the cuff. Like, he's willing to say less if he doesn't have anything to say, as opposed to just kind of giving a long-winded answer just to talk a little bit more. And that's not a dig on Carnell necessarily, but Carnell would often meander just a little bit to like try to find the right words and continue talking. The Sam Adeniran situation to me was a little bit of, he probably talked a little bit more than what he really should have, even though as a media member, I loved it. And I loved getting that extra little bit of info. But when you're reflecting on that, you're thinking, all right, this might not have been the greatest thing between player and coach. And you get the sense that Olof, as a former player at such a high level, Carnell was a former player as well, but Olof Mellberg captaining Sweden's national team, playing alongside Zlatan Ibrahimovic, having the respect of a player like that, it carries a certain weight, and it's clear that he's brought that. And so he seems much more just intentional behind his words and his actions.
So
I have to grow my beard out. So start scowling a little bit more.
So I went back and watched some of his games and his interviews, and seeing the respect that a player like, you know, Zlatan has, who's probably the most intimidating player, like physically, mentally, like, I mean, ever. I mean, there might be others, but like, he is a guy who like you don't want to find in the back alley at all. And nope. The praise, I think he tried to get Olof to be the Swedish national coach. Like, he was in consideration to be that because of Zlatan's backing and his relationship with him. So to see that, if I'm a player, I'm like, shit, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And he can galvanize, and he knows what it takes to make up for whatever shortcomings the skill set might be or whatnot. He knows what it takes to win. And so I'm interested to see what he's able to do. And he comes in with a lot of talent. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they have the talent and the skill to be a top six team out of the West, I think. I don't think a top six is out of the realm. Do you, like, where do you project? Or
that was a question I was going to ask. Yeah, like,
you're more in the loop than, you know, we are out here. Like, what do you think?
Well, there's that map, but I also want to ask you, looking at the entire Western Conference, is there any teams you see out there that you feel like, yeah, they've probably taken a pretty big leap going into 25 outside of City?
I mean, I would say the Galaxy haven't really lost a beat, first of all. So the defending champions, I think they're probably going to be right there at the top of the conference. I like what some of the bottom tier teams have done, like San Jose. I mentioned them earlier. I thought they've done some really good things. I don't know how much they're going to turn it around, but they're going to be a lot more competitive than they were last year. Houston's made some good moves. Colorado just made a good move. Austin FC has signed, I think they spent a little over $30 million or so in the transfer window. They're overhauling their attack, even though they sent out Sebastian Driussi. I think you're going to see some teams fall, like Portland, Salt Lake. They've been more sellers, especially if Evander leaves, like we're assuming that he will. But top of the table, I can see teams like Colorado, LA Galaxy, Houston, LAFC, Seattle, like they usually are. I would pick us probably optimistically fighting for that top four. We'll be in reach throughout the season unless the injury bug hits us again, but no reason to believe we can't fight for a top four. Now, top of the conference is, I don't think we have the talent on paper yet to compete with like an LA Galaxy type team as they stand right now. But there's been so much movement out from a lot of these teams that it's kind of hard to tell who's going to lose some luster from last year. San Diego is making some good signings. They don't have a full team even built yet, but they've got some top tier talent and they've invested in some of their designated players. So while I don't think they have the magic that we had in 23 to really win the conference, I don't think they're going to be a pushover like we tended to be last year or like a Sporting KC was. Wouldn't surprise me if the Western Conference is a lot more competitive than the East this year.
I think it's going to be an advantage to get San Diego's second game of the season. Because I think they're going to get more of their talent with De Bruyne. Like, assuming that he comes over here and his wife wins out in that discussion about the Saudi money or coming to San Diego, I think probably most people would be like, San Diego would be better.
For the family.
What I wanted to ask you about was, in the interviews, it seemed like a consistent theme was about, like, the mental training that they've had to go through this off season and everyone's health. It just, like, everyone talked about, like, we're healthy, like, everyone, like, you know, we feel better. And then they would delve into the, like, mental discussion about the game without getting into the details, but just talking about, like, just this preseason's been more, like, mental. Do you think that is, like, a welcome change for the guys? Because I think that there were some players last year who mentally just could not switch, like, when the ball changes hands. I'm not going to say his name, but there was one player in particular who just could not switch on and off. Sam Adeniran. And so he was...
You just said you weren't going to say a name.
Well, I needed to give an example. So hypothetical. But that whole that mentality part of the game, having a coach who emphasizes that and the difference that can make, and the excitement that it got with, like, a Klaus. Like, he sounded really excited that, like, there was a mental part of this game that the team was being taught, especially the younger guys. So can you speak to that?
Yeah, I think a lot of the players who went through what they did in 24 needed that kind of mental reset just as much as they needed rest from the long season. And now coming into our third year with a few of the veterans like Leuven and Klaus able to say, all right, we've gone through two full MLS seasons. We know what the grind is. We can better help prepare our team throughout the season. And everybody needed to get their head a little bit off of the swivel from last year. The things that this club went through last year, I wouldn't wish on any other club except for maybe Sporting KC, because it wasn't just the injuries that they incurred. It was injuries in practice that were in some regards self-inflicted. There was a moment last year, I remember, where Chris Durkin had said that the locker room was fractured. And when you're having that occur around the same time as a coaching change, you really can't overstate just how bad things were getting. And that isn't just the injuries, like I said, on the field. That's mentally. That's what goes into the things leading up to the 90 minutes. And it's what you're taking away afterwards. You're never in a right mindset if you're referring to the locker room as fractured. We had a few guys allude to that, but I remember vividly looking at Chris Durkin when he said that and just kind of being blown away that those were the words he used to describe that. And so coming off of that season, no matter how good it ended, when you bring on some of the new guys like Hartle and Toyshirt, you're going to end that season thinking about the sum of all parts, not just how it ended and the positives, because you got to figure out what you need to get right in yourself going into another full slog of a season. And for a guy like Klaus, especially, I loved talking to Klaus, and I loved how open and honest he was about referencing personal issues, referencing just how he knows how much he struggled. He knows everything that the fans have been saying, questioning his designated player status and value. He knows it. He might not read it all on social media, but he's an intelligent guy. He knows what's asked of him as the number nine for this team. And he knows that he didn't produce like he should. So to hear him talk about working with his trainer in the physicality of it, taking a step back and getting the mentality right, that's what you need from this club. You need a clean break. You need a mental reset, and you need to be all on the same page going into this season, knowing that you can pull it together. Like what they did last year, I think was a good indication. It gave them hope as opposed to finishing on just the worst possible run you could imagine. That I think would have done far worse. But the mental aspect of this game plays into Olaf's messaging of the nonstop player that I mentioned just as much as the physicality and having the stamina to do it. And so you have to, I mean, this is cannot be underscored enough that the mental aspect of the game for St. Louis and the players after what they went through last year is going to be an important storyline to follow through the good and the bad. It's how they come together, how they train, what are they saying in between games, and just kind of what the vibe is. Is the vibe check, are the vibes high compared to what they were last year? Because they went through this once, and you cannot repeat the past and expect to have any modicum of success.
I was going to ask, one of the questions I want to ask you, Matt, was comparing, you know, training camp 2024 to training camp 2025. There's some obviously huge differences, but is there a different vibe you're picking up now? Like, is it drastically different, or does it remind you of anything of last year, or is it something different entirely?
I would say it's more optimistic. It's not that different, other than I think the expectations are a little different. They had the poor season last year. This time last year, they were coming off of that successful year where there's an unceremonious dump from the playoffs. And so they felt like they wanted to pick up right where they left off. Mm-hmm. They knew they had all these matches at the beginning of the season with Champions Cup. And so it was much more hurried. It was much more, we have to get ready quickly. We have to make sure that we're ready to go. And we don't really, it didn't feel like they had enough time to gel as a team without all these expectations and pressures on them. This year, it seems, not just with the new players coming in and the success that they finished last year with, it just seems like there's an ability to take the process and work with it and enjoy it. The process of a new head coach, learning new formations, learning somewhat of an adjusted style for your system. It feels like the players are buying into the process, and they're willing to ride it out. They're willing to use this preseason, because we talked to them kind of at an interesting point where they were after their first two games, and you heard a little bit of a progression. The first game against the New England Revolution, things were disjointed. There was no attacking bite. They really referenced that it was just a kind of an ugly game. But then they started to see a little bit of an improvement in the second game. They didn't get into a lot of final third stuff, but there was a whole lot of, all right, we're seeing this. We're seeing this work a little bit. We understand where the coach is going. And there was excitement to continue to build upon that. And that was what I think we were missing last year, was that excitement about the process, as opposed to hurry up, get your bodies ready, and we got to jump into the games.
So with that too, like, we don't live in a bubble. It's not a perfect world. I know that, like, St. Louis is, I think, the only other non-league competition is the U.S. Open Cup. Depth is going to come into play at some point. I thought last year they were forced into using a lot of City 2 guys. Do you see that? Do you see some of those guys playing a larger role this season that kind of played their way in?
I think that the 30 guys that St. Louis has on their roster are much stronger top to bottom than the 30 guys they had on last year's roster. Part of it is the loan situation, where you started the season with Isak Jensen on loan and you weren't sure if you were going to get him back. You had Miguel Perez go out on loan and you knew he'd probably be gone for the season. And you had some of your other homegrown players like Caden Glover, who just wasn't there yet physically. He hasn't developed yet. So you were seeing time with City 2 and even into the season, you know, when he was having his national team call-ups. But now you have those guys. Caden Glover is bigger.
He is good, man. Like, I'm sorry. Yes. That guy's a fucking stud.
Well, yeah. And now he has more experience. He's got more physicality behind him. He's 17 instead of a 15, 16 year old he has been. And that matters in this league. So I would expect more from Caden Glover as well, but also Mekhi Joyner. I don't want to see him as our first choice right mid or right winger, but if he comes in the 75th minute, I'm going to be excited to see Mekhi Joyner because of what I've been seeing in the physicality in training, what I saw almost win the Golden Boot at the end of last year. So you're having these second, third, fourth depth spots up and down the lineup that I think you have a little bit more confidence going into this year than you did last year. You didn't make, and it comes from partly the summer transfer window where we made a lot of these top tier signings, and you're improving that starting 11, but also inherently you're just making your depth stronger. You're pushing guys like Rasmus Alm and Indiana Vasilev onto the fringe of starting instead of relying upon them to carry the load. That's going to help your team. And that's a kind of a kind of a hidden benefit of signing these better players is if you had a good player, it pushes him into the squad rotation realm as opposed to an everyday starter, which is what you need to be doing year over year. And that's an expansion team thing too. Part of the expectations that I talked about earlier were, as an expansion team, you have fewer resources available. You're expected to kind of have more resources available as you continue to grow through the years. The money was spent early on the infrastructure, the facilities, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. So being frugal is understandable in the first couple of years, but over the course of years 1, 2, 3, and 4, you need to have this kind of change to the depth. And I think that's going to serve St. Louis well, whether it comes to the midweek matches or the Open Cup this year, because you are going injuries, you know, they are what they are and they're going to happen. But even if you had to pull from City 2, I think you have a few more guys with a little bit more experience and another year older, like a Brendan McSorley, Cam Silly, both guys who've been in camp, that you can pull from if you need that depth. And you're going to be a little more confident than you were last year around that May, June time period when you're pulling guys that you really didn't see a possible future with MLS. And you thought that this was a desperation move at the least.
Those were some rough.
That was a rough, month and a half there before, before the Leagues Cup started. We got our first glimpse of Toysher. Yeah. But I tell you what, Matt, out of all the players acquired up to this point, I'm telling you, man, my favorite to watch last year was Betcher.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, that guy just, like, he had a motor that went the whole game and he made an impact. I'm sure technical eyes would look at it and go, well, you know, he's not my favorite. It's actually Hartle because he's got, you know, more finesse and scores on one touch and everything. But most entertaining for me to watch last year was Simon Betcher. And am I saying his last name right? Because we say it different.
Betcher? Yeah.
Betcher. Okay. I wasn't sure. You had me questioning Toysher. My...
No, that was just me. I'm not really good with... It took me a month and a half to get a dinner in right.
Okay.
Yeah, that one was kind of tricky as well. But no, Simon Betcher, I think he gives you an out-and-out number nine compared to what we had, which is kind of funny thinking the size of Simon Betcher. You don't really think of him as a typical... I'm an Arsenal fan, and so past, I don't know, 10, 15 years, Olivier Giroud is my dude. And so to see him come for LAFC, I love watching him play. But he is the number nine that I was wanting Klaus to be. You know, just objectively, you think about that number nine as a ball hawk. He's in the box. He's always in the box. He's just waiting to vulture a goal. He'll make the runs, but he's not going to make the midfield two goal type runs. He's not going to break the lines in transition. Simon Betcher has the qualities where he wants to stay near the keeper. He wants to stay in the box. He will make those the box runs, and that's what we saw a few times last year. He is well positioned mentally to find which post is the appropriate post to run to, where to time his runs, and he does it without trying to do too much else, which is where you get the difference to Klaus, because Klaus in a lot of ways likes to have his back to goal. He's a possession number nine where he likes to play make for others just as much as he does like to receive that ball and strike it from distance. That's Simon Betcher on top of Klaus, or at least in front of Klaus. That gives us a different look at the end of last year that it's arguable that our best formation was Marcel Hartl, Klaus, and Toysher with Simon Betcher in front of them all. I think that had a lot of promise, and that's where you have Betcher arguably our best out and out number nine.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you that's an exciting starting 11 to see for sure. Who do you think? And I think I was only going to keep you on for 30 minutes, so I went over time with you, Matt. Who's your back line at this point? Yeah. How do you think that's going to shape up? Because we know that was you mentioned it on here, that was a pain point. Who do you think is going to come out there assuming it's a starting back four?
If it's starting back four, it's Giannis Horn at left back, Thomas Tolland at right back. Those are locked in for me. And then the center back duo is whoever wins out of Joachim Nilsson, Timo Baumgartel, and Henry Kessler. Right now, just by default, it's Nilsson and Kessler because they were here last year, and it's Baumgartel's. He has to prove himself as he comes in. Mm-hmm. But I talked to him way longer than I intended to, and I was just enthralled by his story, Timo Baumgartel. I think the way we got him because he was kind of a cast off from Schalke. He had had issues with the coach. He went through his own personal struggles with cancer. The dude's backstory is intense, and he's an intense guy who wears his heart on his sleeve, is very honest, but you can tell that that skill and the determination is there. Wouldn't surprise me if we end up running out a back three just to keep him on the field. And it reminds me of what Olaf Melberg had said of quality over just a set formation. So I'm sure there's going to be times where you run a back four because you need the attackers to look a certain way, or it works better against an opponent. But if you're talking about pure skill, Timo Baumgartel on the ball may be one of our sneakiest best center back options.
Your interview with him sent me down a rabbit hole. Because it was just so fascinating about how he got here. Like, you don't go from the German U21 team 7 years ago, like, and just like drop off a cliff. Like, that doesn't happen. So if he can rediscover or has any bit of that magic, like, you look at, so a weirdo, a psycho, and I looked at his U21 class, that team was stacked. It's like half of Bayern's team. Yep. Like it's like the guy was a stud. So if you can get half of what he had there, that would be an awesome find for them. And I think that's what you would get with a guy with like Lutz, who can tap into his network in Germany, get a Schalke, which was once a proud team. And is now kind of going through some hard times, and they've gotten picked off. McKinney is one of those guys that was with Schalke and has gotten through the system and gotten picked off there. But if they're able to pick a guy like him off, he can add another dynamic, which I think would help City. And then your spine just gets that much tougher and that much more experience with a Berkey, Baumgartner, Leuven, Clout. Like, that's a pretty intimidating spine there.
And he will be very honest that he likes to play with the ball at his feet.
Yeah.
And that's something that we really don't have a center back who, I don't know if they're not capable. They just don't prefer that. They'll send the ball long. They'll send the ball back to Berkey. But Baumgartel, I think, will give us a different dimension. That's why I'm kind of excited to see him on the field more, even if it's at the expense of a Joachim Nielsen or a Henry Kessler.
And he has guys that are comfortable with the center back having the ball at their feet. Like, there's guys that are like a Leuven that like they don't want to get a ball from the center back. They want to get a long ball that's sent forward to like a Klaus, who knocks it down and then they pick it up.
Plays it back.
Leuven has shown that he wants to pick it up from the back and then move it forward. Berkey is comfortable with playing the ball out of the back to a guy like him. So if they can buy into that, like, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's Matt's eyes, or his hair, but I'm bought in now. I'm all in on this season, Matt. So thank you very much.
Let's go.
Yeah, that is all of that is interesting, and I wouldn't have known that. I'm glad you went down that rabbit hole. I didn't have time this afternoon, but it's good that you did that.
I didn't do much work today in the office, so.
Got it. All right. Well, last thing on here, Matt Berkey, you sent me a little message on that one, which I was relieved to read. I know that somebody in this house would have been very upset if he wasn't going to be there in 2025. So my wife will be thrilled. Her favorite player, obviously. Yep. And I'm sure like 85% of the women that enter now Energizer Park are happy that Berkey's going to be back for one more year.
Yeah, no doubt. And that was a little bit of a surprise to see. It wasn't a surprise to see interest in Berkey, because goalkeeper of the year and then still at an elite level. He's got the name recognition. So it's not surprising that Copenhagen came calling, FC Copenhagen.
Sure, yeah.
But I think this is a little bit of a wake-up call for a lot of people. And I know at the end of last year, people started to talk, all right, Berkey's contract's up at the end of 25. He doesn't have an option after that. What's the continuity plan for the City keepers? And I've been watching to see how Ben Lunt develops, Christian Olivares, Nick Bishop down at City 2 now. All of those guys, they're not there yet. And Lunt, you would be hard pressed to get a lot of excitement right now if he were to take over full time. Not to say he can't, because he's shown some flashes, but we haven't seen enough yet. So if Berkey were to move on, I would want to sign somebody else. So
I was going to ask you, Matt, if there's any plan B there, because I feel the same way without knowing as much as you guys. I'm looking at the same thing going, he can spell Berkey for a game or two, give him some rest. Yeah. Like, no problem seeing that. But I tell you, the only goalkeeper I want, if it's not Berkey, I've told you this a bunch of times, that goalie from FC Juarez was maybe the most entertaining player that I saw last year during those penalty kicks. I loved it. I know that the fans were getting into it and booing him and everything, but I enjoyed that thoroughly. I love that guy.
I think characters as keepers, you kind of need that. You need that gravitas that they carry. You don't want your keeper to be timid. You want him to be boisterous a little bit. I was all for that. I mean, I obviously, as a City fan, I didn't like it, but I appreciated it.
Yeah, I did too. And he took it well, because I think the only one that scored on him was Thorsen.
Yep.
Told him to shush, and he took it well. I mean, so I like the guy. So see if he's available. 2026. Yeah, and
with Berkey, I think if you watch that press conference that Lutz had where that question was asked, he almost laughed it off. And his answer is so unequivocal in typical Lutz fashion, saying it doesn't matter if the moon or Barcelona comes calling. Berkey is starting the season here, and he's finishing the season here. Yeah.
I mean, in many ways, I mean, like, I know Leuven and Klaus and Berkey, I think of those as the big three. They were there from the beginning. I would have thrown Parker in there if he was still there, the big four. But in a lot of ways, Berkey's just a face of that franchise.
He is. And this gives us a little reinforcement that he's not going to be sold in the summer transfer window unless some massive unforeseen thing happens. Like, I've been telling people that you can never say never. But what Lutz did is he said never. Unless something catastrophic happens, where if we get eliminated from playoff contention by July, if we haven't won a game, maybe something's on the table. But Roman Berkey is St. Louis City in 2025 to a large extent. And as Berkey goes, so goes our season, the way he's been performing the past 2 years. His importance to this team, I don't think any of us don't appreciate just how important he is to this team and what he's been able to do when our backline has had issues. He's prevented so many goals that otherwise would have been blowouts or that just would have cost us more points. And knowing that we have him for the full season with the full support of the sporting director, knowing also that it does sound like there's some negotiations taking place and we'll see if they can come to it's not an extension, but a new contract after this year. That's up to Berkey. It's going to be up to what Berkey wants to do, because I don't think there's going to be another MLS team that wants to pay his salary for a keeper. We have not seen very many teams willing to do that. So I think staying in MLS, it's either St. Louis or bust. And if Berkey wants to stay in St. Louis, if he wants to continue in MLS, then that's going to be his call. If he gets phone calls or his agent puts feelers out and gets calls and says, you could return to the Bundesliga, you could start in the Bundesliga, that would probably be enticing for him. But
And I think he's probably earned that. And I don't think that St. Louis would hold that against him, but I think that it goes to show that St. Louis has done from an expansion team side to identify three guys like Klaus, Leuven, Berkey, and keep them together the way that they have, and to have their personalities all kind of align through thick and thin on and off the field has been, like, for someone not from St. Louis, and those guys obviously are not from St. Louis, but they've just encapsulated what St. Louis means, like the fandom. Like, if something happens in St. Louis, like, I've always viewed the Cardinals as, if there's internal bullshit, the media doesn't know it. Like, ESPN's not going to break the news. It's going to be a local reporter there, or it's going to be kept under caps. Mm-hmm. And that's what the soccer team's done. And so that's respectable that they've been a carbon copy of the city. And that's all that you want at the end of the day.
Totally agree.
So,
except he hasn't had authentic toasted ravioli yet. I've tried to replicate it out here in North Carolina.
It's been really good. And I think they're undefeated.
Tried like six different versions. So, really?
Yeah. Right. So it's going to be harder. It's going to be harder. Hard attack or bust this season.
I don't know. I've tried six different versions. I think I'm getting close.
any dinner of toasted ravioli is a good dinner.
It is. Well, Matt, I can't thank you enough. I know you spent a lot of time with us tonight, but it was anxious to talk to you. And one, thank you for educating a newbie like me. But I'm going on my third season now, so I'm starting to get in the hang of this. You know, I had to force myself to say match instead of game. What, for about a good year and a half there, it was like couldn't quite do it. And then you know, pitch instead of field, but I'm getting there. It's baby steps with me.
Ted Lasso syndrome.
Right. It came at the perfect time, to be honest with you. But yeah, so again, I'm the emotional fan. Chris actually knows what he's talking about, and that's just kind of how the podcast we do. But Matt, once again, thank you very much. And for those who are listening to our show at this point are either baseball fans that knew me from the other one, but if you're here for soccer, you've already listened to Flyover Footy. You probably subscribed to it. But you can find Flyover Footy at Flyover Footy out there on X. You can find Matt at Matt Baker STL. Do I have that right?
That's right.
On X as well. And look up the podcast. It's really great. And even the YouTube videos, which I watch all those interviews via YouTube as well. But the podcast is awesome. It's one of my favorites. One of the three or four I listen to at this point. So, Matt, thank you very much, man.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Yeah, appreciate having me on. It was a blast.
All right. Thank you.